Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And, of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for our free seminars, and the schedule's out. We'll be going over that. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. Lots of new sponsors this week as well. You can link to our Facebook page. You can link to our Condo and HOA blog at www.hoa-condoblog.com. You can also join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements that we send out about the show week in and week out. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, that's 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And Glazer & Associates' website is at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. And like we tell you each week, we are getting a great response from people who are registering for our board certification seminars throughout the state. And we're getting close to actually those classes kicking in. Remember, Florida law now provides that members of a condo board, you must get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. In fact, you can even get certified 1 year before getting elected to the board. And lots of people like to get certified before actually getting elected. So when they can run, they can actually put in their credentials that they are already certified. And one way of getting certified, take the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course. It's the first course that was written by an attorney and was approved by the Florida DBPR.
And that was you who wrote it and got certified. And Eric is now certified nearly 3,000 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on the Florida Condominium Board of Directors. The course is fun, the course is free, and there's food served. You get to ask questions, you leave with a summary of everything you learn, and a really nice frameable certificate.
Yeah, and again, before you know it, election season is going to be in full swing. So come learn about your duties as board members, budgets, reserves, financial reporting, board meeting procedures, and a lot more. And this year, we even added some information about making material alterations, competitive bidding, and emotional support animals.
Boy.
Big topic.
Woof.
And if your board is actually interested in getting certified at your condo or even in our law office, just give us a call again at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and we can make arrangements to bring the course to you. How about, Scott, tell us when the next seminars are at?
I think the next seminar is at the Hard Rock here in Hollywood on November 8th at 6 p.m. Then you got one coming up in December, December 1st, actually, at 10 a.m., and you'll be there at the Waldorf Astoria in Naples.
We do it in class, Scott. Yeah. You know that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
one way
to
roll here.
Yeah, you told me last couple of weeks ago you were there with your family, and you said it was great, so I think it sounds like a really fantastic place to have the seminar. And then on December 15th, you'll be back in Orlando at the Holiday Inn at Universal Studios. So if you want to register for any of the ones that are coming up that Eric will be traveling to, why don't you just go to the show's website at www.condocrazeandhoas.com and fill out the old form.
Absolutely. How about on that note, Karen, we take Fran from Fort Lauderdale. How are you, Fran?
I'm fine, and you?
Okay, what can we help you with?
Okay, I was calling regarding responsibilities of a management company. The company that we had let our insurance on our building expire, and a couple of owners during that time were supposed to provide documentation to their insurance company, and they wound up having policies forced placed on them.
Mm.
And as a result, they, you know, had to come out of their pocket and pay. Could you possibly report the company to DP, you know, the Division of Professional Department of Business and Professional Regulation, or
yeah, but I don't
how
know.
Would
yeah.
you
that's probably not an area that, at least in my opinion, that they'd be interested in. That's kind of like a breach of contract action that's between the association and the management company. It's not a deliberate sign of doing something, but you know, wrong by your management company, such as like stealing money or you know, doing things deliberately to harm. That's just you know, a lapse in the responsibilities that they were supposed to do. So I think by reporting them, you know, it's not certainly not going to get them in trouble. It's like even when, you know, a lawyer could do something wrong in a case, it doesn't necessarily relate to a complaint to the Florida bar. It just could be that they messed up on a case. It doesn't mean that they've done something that requires disciplinary action. Okay? Yeah, but, but your association certainly has a valid complaint about it, and if your unit owner suffered some monetary damages as a result, it may be something that the management company may, in fact, be responsible for. Okay?
Thanks,
all right,
Fran.
Thanks for the call.
Well, last show, our guests were Jeffrey Ulm and James Gonzalez from Association Services of Florida. We spoke about the fact that they are the largest property management company in North America. They even helped answer some of the calls from our listeners as well. What's in store this week?
Yeah, again, Karen, thanks to Jeffrey and James for being on the show last week. Great show. And, you know, we do our best here each week to keep the material new and to keep the material fresh. But every once in a while, you know, a topic becomes real hot and it's definitely worthy of repeating. You know, as we know, we're nearing that finish line toward Election Day, and lots of homeowners are eager to show their loyalty to the candidate that they like. And not just necessarily in the presidential election, by the way, but in all kinds of races that are going on in our communities. And the question is, you know, can these homeowners put up signs in their community if the governing documents say no signs?
Well, as we also said a few weeks ago, there is a very limited case law about homeowners actually displaying political signs in a, quote, no sign community, unquote. But let's just remind everyone about a case we spoke about on the show a few weeks ago called Mazda Brook HOA v. Kahn. Oh, Kahn. And here's what the case is about.
Yeah, here's the case. Plaintiff was Mazda Brook Common Homeowners Association, and it manages a common interest community in which individual owners agree to certain common rules and regulations for the benefit of the entire group, right? Pretty much sounds like any HOA down here. And the rules and regulations of the community bar signs except as provided for in the declaration. Well, the defendant, his name was Wasim Kahn, and he lived in a planned townhouse community managed by Mazda Brook Commons. And in 2005, this guy actually ran for Parsippany Town Council, and he posted two signs in support of his own candidacy at his own private residence, one inside the window of his townhouse and another inside his door. And the association notified him that the signs violated the association's rules, and they ordered him to take them down. Now, Mazda Brook's regulations banned all residential signs except for sale signs, right? Sounds common. A lot of associations down here have similar rules. The case makes itself all the way up to the Supreme Court in New Jersey, and upon review, the Supreme Court balanced the minimal interference with Mazda Brook's private property interests against the unit owner's free speech rights to post political signs on his own property. And after hearing the case, the court found that the sign policy in question violated the free speech clause. Yeah, a violation of the free speech clause of the state constitution, believe it or not. And the guy was allowed to keep his signs up, even though it was a no-sign community.
Yeah, I think, you know, we said a few weeks ago, that was probably the right decision. Because, you know, here in America, you would certainly think we have a right to publicly display our support for any candidate, even if the sign that, you know, we use might clash with the color scheme of the condo or the HOA. It just seems un-American not to allow at least a little sign, you know?
That might make sense, Scott, except if you live maybe in my community, because here's what happened this week. I actually received a telephone call from a homeowner in my community where I live telling me that a board member came onto his property and actually removed the political signs that he put out. And this was all caught on video camera, by the way. Now, while the docs admittedly say no signs, they also don't give the board members the right to enter onto someone's private home, their private property, without a court order and remove these signs.
Yeah, I mean, we get so many calls from people that see, you know, people in their associations violating rules all the time, and they think that they can just go in there and, you know, walk onto private property and do it every one. No, that's why you have to get a lawyer, and you have to, you know, get authority.
Burn down the child swing set, exactly.
I agree with your sentiments, Eric. I don't care what the docs say. Under no scenario can a board member or a property manager or anybody enter a piece of private property and tear down political signs or anything else without actual court authority.
Of course. And as a matter of fact, the police had to get involved, and there's a police report that was filed. But it actually gets worse, because listen to this. Now, I'll admit, I've only heard one side of the story on this, but this homeowner who complained tells me that the board member complained to him that he can't put up that particular political sign because the board, as a board of directors, gets to vote for the entire community as to which candidate they're going to back up, believe it or not. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And I'll tell you something else, and we discussed this before, too. Let's say your community does have, in fact, a no-sign provision in its governing documents. But each year, basically, since that community was created, you do let people put up signs. Let's say during the holidays that say Merry Christmas or Happy New Year or Happy Halloween. Well, guess what? By allowing those types of signs, in my opinion, the board waived its right to require you to remove political signs. A sign is a sign is a sign, and if you're going to allow signs that promote the holidays, to me there's no way the board can then prohibit other types of signs, especially political speech signs. And it actually reminds me of a case, Scott, out of the 4th DCA, you may remember. I think it's called the Prizzo case, where a condominium's documents say you can't have pets. No pets are allowed, but the board says, okay, cats are allowed, though. No, the case makes it up to the 4th DCA, and the courts say, no, no pets means no pets. So to me, the court would say no signs, you know, means no signs, and if you waived it for one, you waived it for both.
Right. And how does Florida treat people putting up signs urging people to vote for a particular candidate?
Well, I don't know of any specific Florida case on this issue in Florida, but interestingly enough, the Florida Constitution and the homeowner statutes do, in fact, talk about exercising your political rights. There is a statute in Florida, again, that kind of addresses it. And the statute says no entity or entities shall unreasonably restrict any unit owner's right to peacefully assemble or right to invite public officers or candidates for public office to appear or speak in common elements, common areas, and rec facilities. So at least to me, you know, it's clear that in Florida there's a strong public policy here toward allowing freedom of speech, again, especially political speech. And I think that if a similar case wound up in Florida, wouldn't surprise me one bit if a court would rule that any provision of a condo or an HOA deck that prohibits these signs that promote endorsements of a candidate, that's unconstitutional.
Yeah, but everybody needs to keep in mind, though, that in the New Jersey case, it was decided 2-1 of a 3-judge panel. And the judge that dissented felt strongly that if you moved into the community with that restriction in place, as a matter of contract law, you were bound by that restriction. And, you know, Eric, you might not know this, but we're a pretty big contract right state here in Florida. And it might turn out differently. I don't know if it went before the 7-Up in Tallahassee.
Well, let's love to hear what our listeners say. Let's take our first break. And when we get back, we'll find out why it's so hard, so difficult to sometimes say nice things about your board members. We'll try to figure out why. We'll hear from our blog readers about who they thought would make a better president of their condo or HOA, Obama or Romney. And, of course, we'll take your calls and emails about anything and everything else going on in the world of condos and HOAs. Just give us a call here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Talk 850. 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. As you know, we write each week. It comes out on Monday, our blog with a new topic each week. And the address of that blog is www.hoa-condoblog.com. And 2 weeks ago, our blog topic was all about Labor Day. And I made the point that if on Labor Day we honor hard work, we should certainly use that day to give a thank you to all of our board members who do hard work in all of our communities and yet don't get paid a dime. Certainly argued that if we honor people who work hard and get paid, we should definitely honor people who work hard and don't get paid. And I urged our loyal readers just to say a few nice words about their board members on this holiday. And despite the fact that we literally get thousands of hits on our website each month, not a single person wrote in with something nice to say about their board members.
Why is it so hard for people to say nice things about their board members? Come on, people. There are thousands of board members out there who certainly deserve some praise.
You know, you would think so, Karen, right? But, you know, maybe it's because only the bad news makes the newspapers kind of, you know, for example, if like Joe Smith becomes president and works hard and he saves the association $100,000 a year, that story gets absolutely no news in the press. But if that same Joe Smith steals $100,000 a year, that story makes big news and it casts a black eye on everybody,
right?
Basically.
I don't know if the former is actually news. You're
right.
Not supposed to write stories about people doing, you know, what they're supposed to do.
Right. Well, so the truth is, like we always say, you turn on the news and only bad things make the news.
True.
Basically.
Maybe we'll get lucky today and some of our callers will call in with some praise for their board. It could happen.
Well, let's make radio history today, all right? How about it? Can somebody call in who's not on the board of directors and say, you know what? My board does a great job. And yes, I'm going to say some nice words about them today.
Well, you know,
could happen.
You know, where I work,
Jets could win the Super Bowl too.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Where I work, there's a commercial condominium, and I hear the president of that association is just the best.
Brilliant. Yeah, I know that guy. He is bright. All right, how about this? Let's take Joe. Joe is on the line. Don't know where Joe's from. How are you, Joe?
Okay, I'm in Dunedin, just above Clearwater.
Nice.
Gotcha. Oh, far away. Okay, how can we help you, Joe?
We've got a couple of units that we're being told they're in foreclosure, but it's been nearly 2 years for these units, and I'm wondering if that's extraordinary, too long for the process, and I believe they were both reverse mortgages, if that has anything to do with it.
Probably not, but for it to be 2 years in foreclosure, absolutely not uncommon down here, certainly in South Florida. The question is, though, you know, what's happening? Your lawyer should be able to tell you if the bank is moving with those cases, obviously, or not moving. And if they're not moving, if these condo units are rentable, if they're in good shape, the association may not want to just sit back and wait and do nothing. But some associations are taking the aggressive approach, and they're the ones that are foreclosing, beating the banks to the finish line, getting a final judgment, taking back ownership, and then renting those units out and collecting the rent each month.
Yeah, but you know that might not be appropriate for every association, so you got to make sure that it's something that your association can benefit from before you jump head on.
Exactly. Now, Scott makes a great point, because a lot of times associations wind up foreclosing, and they take back a unit, and the unit is in horrible shape. I mean, the kitchen's been ripped out, the walls are, you know, are all damaged, and the association just foreclosed on a unit that they really can't do anything with. But if you have a unit that's rentable, yeah, instead of waiting for 2 years for the bank to come around and finish their thing, you know, the association may want to jump in, take possession of the unit first, and then rent it out. You should be able to pick up your phone, call the association's attorney, and get an answer and figure out where things are at.
Okay, so it's not an issue for somebody to call the lawyer directly. No, you, we do have a manager.
Well, the manager should be able to tell you, but the manager should be in contact with the attorney. But the bottom line is the board should know what the strategy is. What's the ultimate strategy?
Well, are you on the board, Joey?
I am on the board. Yeah, so this is my first year.
All right, yeah, but it's your attorney. You can give him a call.
Okay.
Yeah, ask for a status
conference.
And we
do have a couple that we've taken back and rented.
Okay, so why aren't you doing it with the others?
These two seem to be a mystery, and I'm just trying to find out where I can go with this. Yeah. I should call the lawyer directly.
Yeah, don't know. Sometimes you have a situation where unit owners file a bankruptcy in the interim, and that really throws things into chaos, at least for a little while. So, again, don't know. I have no idea if, you know, I'm certainly not suggesting that your attorney's doing anything wrong. Just, you know, you at least deserve an answer, however.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Joe. Dunedin.
Wow. Dunedin, yes.
Dunedin, whatever. Same thing.
See, well, you have your courses all over the state,
yep,
and people
absolutely
start listening.
Very flattering that they're listening from so far away. We are at the bottom of the hour break, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. When we get back, we'll talk about who would be a better president in your association, Obama or Romney. Be back right after this.
Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Taking your phone calls today at 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585. Want to hear if you have something nice to say about a board member.
It can happen. All right. 2 weeks ago, despite the fact that we're $16 trillion in debt and the Middle East is on fire, we decided to have some fun with the blog smack dab in the middle of the election season. And we threw out the question as to who would you vote for in your own association election if Obama was running against Romney in your community. And let's hear what the readers had to say. And the results were pretty mixed, just like we would expect. All right. Kim writes in and says, are you kidding me? Why would you even ask such a stupid question? Obama blames Bush for all our country's problems. It's about time that we get a president that's not interested in his own personal image, but actually wants to see people prosper and not live a poor existence on government assistance.
Hey, Eric, don't you think that just kind of disqualifies everybody from running for president that ever has? They don't care about their personal image?
That's very true.
Well, Joy writes in and says, I would vote for Romney because I think he would keep our association fiscally solvent, maintain our property, and thus our property values. It would ensure the association received the services from vendors that we paid for and would look for ways to do the job efficiently but economically. He would care about his neighbors and instill a sense of community among association members. I feel Obama would go around glad-handing at every opportunity, touting how great a leader he is. At the same time, I think he would initiate projects on the whim without regard for how the association would pay for those projects. Every year under his leadership, we would probably have an operational deficit because Obama pays no attention to budget figures. I feel that his actions could create factions among the membership that would be divisive and nonproductive. After Obama is in office for a few years, the property would be in disrepair and large special assessments levied.
Ouch! I'd like everybody to note that unlike the federal government, most condo associations actually have to operate on a budget, which and keep something somewhat balanced, whereas the federal government doesn't have to. But Harriet writes in and says, Dear Eric, I would vote for President Obama because he realizes that a community association is just that, a community association, and she capitalized community, and not a business. As a resident and former board member who has endured through a board term when the board members decided to run the association as a business and nearly drove us into the ground with money-making schemes, there is a vast difference between a profit-making business and a community of people. Any community, be it an association, a city, or a state, needs to be aware of and responsive to the needs and requirements of that community.
And Bob writes in and says, I would vote for Romney, who's a business person. That's what it takes to run the largest business in the world. Nearly 4 years is long enough for Obama to turn the tide on most anything.
All right. Marilyn writes in and says, I'd vote for Obama. But you forgot to say if the board was going to work together or be like the present Congress and Senate is. Well, good
that's
point.
That's a very good point by Marilyn.
Yes.
Lois writes in, and she says, "Dear Eric, can I honestly say I would not vote for either one, even though I am way beyond childbearing age and too old for elective or necessary surgery. My main concern is that I believe a person has the right to choose whatever is done to their body, whether it is cosmetic surgery, major surgery, pregnancy prevention, or abortion. No person has the right to decide what any other person should do or not do. This should be a joint decision between husband and wife or two significant others or a lone person. End of soapbox, just wish there were better choices." Well, I think on that issue, it's pretty clear. Well, so I don't know what Lois is writing about. But
yeah, I mean, hold on a second. Some people took this question that was supposed to be fun and stuff way, way, way too seriously. And the question I asked was, who would make a better condo president, Obama or Romney? And people are going off on topics like abortion and stuff. You know, the last I checked, there's nothing in the condo statute that would allow the president to have the power to outlaw abortion in the community.
Yeah.
You know, kicking kids out once they're born, however, yeah, in a 55-over community, yes. Terminating them in the womb, no. Can't do that yet in most associations in Florida.
I would just like, you know, kind of check to see, like, you know, what the color scheme of their house is, see what kind of paint contractors they would hire for the condo or something like that.
Right?
I don't think any of the positions either candidate has set forth in their campaigns really, you know, correlates to what they would do as a condo president.
Hey, I'll tell you what, however we like or don't like, I bet you they're both smart enough for neither of them to live in a community association.
There
bet you
go.
Romney or Obama never lived in either
they,
one.
They teach you that at Harvard Law.
Well, I don't think Obama can paint the White House pink. Frank writes in and says, "We will vote for Mitt. Our funds will be under better management. We do not need another community organizer."
All right, and here's one out of
even in your
field.
Community? Really?
That's
actually kind
that's
of like
exactly
a
what you
work
do need,
experience
right?
there.
All right, here's one completely out of left field. P, just calls himself P, writes in and says, "I would vote for Ron Paul."
Yay!
"Because he believes in property rights, no debt, the rule of law, the Constitution, and we would never hear the words collective good. Of course, I only live in an HOA because I was completely ignorant of what they were when I moved to Florida for my husband's job. And I should have educated myself, and I doubt Ron Paul would live in one." I'll go out on a limb here. I'm sorry. I ain't voting for anybody that gets on TV and says, "No, I think Iran should have the bomb just like all the other countries
no
do."
No way.
So, no, P, I do not agree with you. And
I'd just like to add, P, you do have property rights, but because, as you so eloquently stated, you were too ignorant to find out what you were signing away. I don't know if, you know, whoever the president of your condo association is really going to be able to protect you from, you know, signing contracts without reading them. It really has nothing to do with property rights and just being a smart investor.
Exactly. All right, let's keep the political theme of today's shows going just a little longer today. You know, as our listeners know, well, this is an important topic here, especially for you and I, Scott. Circuit court judges run for election in Florida, and judges at the appellate level, they get appointed by the governor, but every 10 years, these appellate judges need to face what's called merit retention by the voters. You know, you'll go into the voting booth, a lot of you will recognize a question, and they'll ask you if a judge should be retained, and you have to say yes or no. And basically, the voters get to decide whether or not the appellate judge actually gets to stay on the bench. And as long as that judge gets a majority vote, they get to stay.
Yeah, and right now there's a fight between the Florida Bar and the Republican Party of Florida because the Republican Party has decided to oppose three Florida Supreme Court justices who are on the ballot for merit retention.
Yeah, and those justices who are now up for merit retention are Fred Lewis, Barbara Pariente, and Peggy Quince, and all of whom I've had the honor of appearing in front of last year, and all of whom are more than qualified to serve in their respective roles. The question becomes, though, you know, since we have this system in place that actually became a constitutional amendment, should the voters base their decision on whether or not to retain these justices on the fact that they meet the qualifications? Or should the voters also care about the party those justices are affiliated with and on the decisions that those justices have already made when their sitting capacity as justices? Or again, do they merely get to stay on the court once appointed, you know, because they have the credentials?
Well, the truth is the average person has no idea who they're voting for when it comes to electing a judge or even whether or not that judge should be retained. Isn't the whole way of electing judges actually kind of ridiculous?
I'll go on record and say yes. I think the system that we currently have in place is absolutely ridiculous. It's crazy that we vote for judges down here and judges actually have to spend their valuable time campaigning and worrying about getting reelected. And there's a reason why the federal constitution, at least to me, was designed for judges to be appointed for life, so they don't have to worry about the decisions they make or the political affiliations that they keep, you know, eventually paying a part in whether or not they get to keep their job. It's just a bad system.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. I have to agree with both of you. No matter how much an attorney even litigates, and God knows I litigate a lot and I see a lot of judges all the time, it's still impossible for even an attorney going to court all the time to get to know all of the judges, never mind, you know, the regular person that, you know, might go to court once every 10 years or something. It's ridiculous that judicial candidates that outspend the other making signs to get elected, you know, seem to, you know, be, you know, win the vast majority of the elections despite the fact that the other candidate's far more qualified.
Right. And we've actually seen this in South Florida, some examples of very well-qualified, long-term judges losing their job to a candidate that really wasn't as qualified but simply maybe had better name recognition in that community, or they outspent the judge with all the experience. And I'd certainly guess that most judges out there hate the fact that they have to run for office or for re-election. But again, the question is, since they do have to run for re-election, you know, are they fair game? The Florida Bar says politics really shouldn't play a part in getting judges elected or whether or not to retain them. But opponents of that view believe judges are open for criticism and debate and on-air attacks because, hey, that's what's required when judges run for office, just like anybody else. Judges, just like anybody else, don't get a free pass. But we'd love to know what our listeners think. Who do you agree with? The Florida Bar, who says leave politics at the door when it comes to merit retention of judges because that keeps a free and independent judiciary? Or do you side with the Republican Party in this case, who says judges who run for office, they don't get a free pass. They are subject to criticism and attack ads in the press. Give us a call here, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro. Here's your chance to talk to an attorney about your condo or HOA. Give us a call here at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right, we're still trying to make radio history today, Karen. Somebody call in. Come on, say something nice about your board. And the trick is you can't be on the board.
Okay? It can't be about yourself.
Can't be about yourself. Can't compliment yourself. But somebody call in and say, hey, my board does a great job. Hasn't, you know what? I'm doing the show now how many years? In my fourth year? I can certainly count on one hand how many people actually called in. And you know the truth is that there's lots of people doing a lot of great jobs for free on the board. So come on. You can do it. Find it in your heart. Say something nice about your board and participate in radio history. All right, let's talk about a topic that is actually near and dear to my heart, and that is alternative dispute resolution. This is really important. Many of our listeners know that most disputes in an HOA, you guys have to start out that dispute in mediation. And several years ago, I really had the honor and privilege of being certified by the Florida Supreme Court as a circuit court mediator. And I really believe in the process because it removes cases from the courtroom. It really drastically cuts down on litigation costs for associations and its owners. And if any of our listeners out there have either a good or bad experience with arbitration or mediation, we'd love to hear about it. Again, give us a call, 877-850-8585.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, though, the condo statute hasn't really picked up on the benefits of requiring some sort of pre-suit mediation. Instead, you have to go through the statute requires that most arguments between owners and the association start off in arbitration, which is more like an informal court process that goes through the DBPR's office in Tallahassee, and they basically, you try your case a very, very quicker pace. And sometimes you actually get sent to mediation, but that it's a little bit more pricey than just, you know, everybody hashing it out, you know, in a room and trying to resolve things.
Right.
And,
you know, the big difference between the two is arbitration. You have an arbitrator assigned a case, and they actually get to decide your case most of the time, whereas a mediator just tries to get the parties in a room and try to settle the case. Now, don't get me wrong. I still think arbitration was a good idea by the Florida legislature. Now, the statute makes it clear the purpose of the arbitration statute is really to alleviate an already crowded court system. And again, certainly I think we can all agree we're all in favor of unclogging the courts. But, and this is important, that arbitration system is definitely broken. And those of you who have had experience with the arbitration system, you're going to know the frustration that I'm talking about. And here's the first issue. When you file a case in the arbitration division in Tallahassee, that case gets assigned to an arbitrator. And that arbitrator usually now winds up entering an order requiring the defendant to file some sort of a response.
Yeah, and then the arbitrator usually sets down a status conference and gets the parties on the phone to get a feel for what the case is about. But here is, I guess where the problem sets in. If the arbitrator wants to, the arbitrator can enter an order sending the parties to mediation.
Right. So now, again, you started off in arbitration. The arbitrator, though, sends you to mediation. And at mediation, the parties present their case to like a neutral arbitrator who simply tries to get the parties to reach a mutually acceptable resolution. But sometimes, you know, despite the best efforts of that mediator, he or she, you simply can't get the parties to settle. It's just not going to happen. The mediator then declares what's called an impasse. But instead of the case now going back to the arbitrator for a final decision on that case, either party now has a right to discontinue the arbitration process and demand that the case goes, you know where? To court. So everything that you just did in trying to avoid court for nothing.
But I thought the whole purpose of this law was to keep cases out of the courtroom.
Yeah, and that's exactly why, Karen. At least to me, the statute makes no sense. Now, I know a lot of people in Tallahassee actually listen to this show, so I would hope that there's at least an urge on their end to also get this statute changed. Because, you know, if the arbitrator sends the parties to mediation and the mediation fails, the parties should simply be forced to finish that case with the mediator, just like it would happen in a court of law. Why should the parties really have to start the argument all over again in a court of law just because mediation failed? It doesn't make sense. You know, why should the court system now really be burdened just because the case couldn't be settled at mediation, Scott? It just makes no sense.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, in court, judges almost always refer cases to a mediator. If the case fails to settle, it goes right back to the judge. That just, you know, makes sense. Arbitration should certainly work the same way.
Well, let me say this. I'd like to say, though, that this was the only problem with the arbitration system, but it's not. Let me tell you about a significant problem that the division itself created. And Scott, you and I have been dealing with this issue a lot, coincidentally, in the last few weeks. As a lot of our listeners know, most of the larger condominium buildings that have been built over the last 5 or 7 years, all of them, almost without exception, have at least one commercial unit in them. For example, there's like a small grocery store on the first floor, maybe even a restaurant. Some even have salons, you know, little takeout places or whatever it may be. And here's the problem. Once there's one commercial unit in a condominium building, that case is now called a mixed-use condominium. Tell everybody what the problem with having a mixed-use condominium is.
Well, I don't know if it's so much as a problem. It just might be, as it is, maybe save some money for some condo associations if they have a really important dispute that's probably not going to settle right away, Eric.
Right.
But what the significance of this is that according to the arbitration division, they have created a rule, and this was done a few years ago, that says that the division will not hear any arbitration cases that involve mixed-use condominiums. Their cases must start out in court instead of arbitration, because the division only hears cases between unit owners and associations that are only in residential.
You have one commercial unit in your condo, all of a sudden you're not eligible for arbitration, and you got to go to court. And really, every building being built today, they all have commercial units, so it's really depriving owners of the ability to actually arbitrate rather than litigate, and could wind up costing people a lot of extra money.
Even if it's 1 in 500?
Right, exactly. You can have a building, a 500-unit building, a modern building that they would build, let's say, in downtown Miami. You put one commercial condominium unit in there, guess what? You can't no longer go to arbitration. You're forced to start your case in a court of law, and you know, no two ways about it. You'd think that some of the larger buildings, they're the ones that have commercial units or two in them. They should certainly be required to arbitrate rather than litigate, but this is what I think is a silly rule adopted by the division. It doesn't make any sense. It's arbitrary, and to me, it violates the intent of the statute. And the unit owners and association and the associations that have a commercial unit or two in their communities, they are suffering as a result of that. So DBPR, if you're listening, and I know, again, like I said, many of you in Tallahassee do listen to the show, try to change that rule, do the right thing, and revoke that house-made rule. We're trying to get you guys more business up there, and we want your help. But it looks like we're at the end of another week. Quick prediction today, Scott. Football, go.
There will be football.
There will be football. Genius. The man is a genius. All right, Jets will beat the 49ers. You heard it here.
And Arizona will beat the Dolphins.
All right, guys, have a great week. Thanks for tuning in to Condo Craze and HOAs.